Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to listeners of Tun Trade Islam International. We welcome you once again to the program, the car program. Joining us telephonically on the line tonight is Brother Adil Miam, and Abdul Haq's not around today, but we'd like to welcome Brother Adil on the program. Adil, my brother, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi to you.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Mawlana, and to all our listeners. Jazakallah khairan for the opportunity. We thank and we shukar to Allah given us opportunity so we can try and benefit the listeners and the knowledge we have on Murakar.
Jazakumullah, Adil. All right, dear listeners, it's your phone-in program. You give us a call on the number to call for the program, 011-854-1548. The SMS number for tonight's program is 082-580-8070. It's 082-580-8070. We're waiting for the calls as well as the SMSs. Adil, first question coming through is, with regards to a Nissan Maxima six-cylinder, the problem started, it says, with losing power while accelerating when installed. Would only start after sitting for about 10 minutes, but would only drive for about 2 miles and then lost speed and stall again. The first time it happened, a little inside lights flickered and the brake and battery warning lights came on. Now will only start when jumped, but stalls after about 30 seconds. Please help. Jazakumullah.
Jimona, this is another difficult one. The problem I think the brothers have in there is the alternator probably not charging the battery. That's why the lights started flickering and the lights started coming on the dashboard. So while jump starting is giving a little power to the battery, you must remember that the battery is only used to start the car, and after that the battery is discarded and the alternator takes over to power the car up. So basically what's happening there is a little power that's left in the battery using out that power, and that's why the car is stalling. So inshallah, if we check the alternator, it should solve his problem.
Right, Jazakumullah. I did you say possibly a battery-related, connection-related problem here?
Jim, also, I think more so you got an alternator problem. The alternator probably not charging the battery.
Okay. Adil, the brother says regarding another car as well, he doesn't say what car, I think it's an Opel Recordia, that why does my Opel Record sound like a diesel truck every time I start it up?
Most of you, he's got the Opel Record, if they came with a chain or a belt, or a timing belt. To turn the engine, there were two derivatives. One is a timing chain that turns the engine. The other one is a cam belt, commonly known and commonly used on more Japanese vehicles. So the Opel Record, I think, probably had a chain. So maybe the noise is hearing, the clattering noise when you start up the car in the morning, especially when it's cold, you're hearing the clattering of the chain. So basically the timing chain and the timing chain tensioner should be checked on that vehicle to try and eliminate the noise. The other possibility could be maybe his valve rockers. They're not getting enough oil coming to them to feed them, and probably they are noisy. Or even the older models, the tepid clearance can also cause a noise like it. But the tepid clearance more will be all the time, not only when it's cold.
Okay, Jazakumullah. Adil, the brother says he's got some major electrical issues here. What happened is he just put in a new alternator, but something keeps grounding and is eating up the power.
Repeat the question. I didn't hear you quite clearly.
The brother says he's got some major electrical issues. I think it's relating to a Camry. What happens is you put in a new alternator, mm-hmm. but something just keeps up grounding and it's eating up all the power all the time.
So basically what's happened with this guy, he's got a current draw, what they call in our terminology. Something stealing the power from the battery when all the accessories are off. That's why causing the car not to start probably when after a while. So basically, you should take it to a qualified electrician who can check the current draw. The main thing is maybe commonly known is the boot light staying on, or maybe one of the interior lights or the park lights, or maybe feedback from a radio or from an automatic radio antenna that normally causes that problem. So basically it will be a bit of a hindrance task to check what is the culprit, but not very difficult. If you take it to a good electrician, I think surely they can solve that problem out for him.
Okay. After the question, brother's got a Toyota Corolla 1990, better known as the Kentucky models here. Lovely cars, very, very
lovely
strong cars.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a question, Adil. It's got about 580,000 kilos on the clock.
Oh, that's a lot.
Lovely cars. That's a strong car, Adil.
Very
but I think he's got a problem now. The engine was never open up, but now he's got an engine knock when he accelerates, and it gets louder the faster he goes. Bearing knock, Adil?
Yeah, you're correct. You're 100% correct. He's got an engine knock. Now, I think the engine has done his job. 580,000 kilometers, alhamdulillah. Very reliable, very good car, like you explained. And I think now it's come to the end of the road. But not necessarily. If he gets a good technician who can sort the engine out for him, or maybe if he can find a good used one and stick it back into the car, I think he'll be good for another good couple 100,000 kilometers. My father-in-law actually had one of those cars, and he and he also went as much as that, and I got him a good used engine, and he continued after that, and he sold the car, and now and then I still see the car driving. So you can imagine the reliability of those vehicles. Like you earlier said, very reliable, very economical, very easy cars to maintain. So I think if he's going to do the engine, he must do it properly, or rather get a good used engine and stick it in there, and he'll be away for another 580,000 kilometers.
Yeah, gee. And it's just personal self. I also had one time ago, a few weeks ago, one to sell, also with a bearing knock. We done the entire engine up for about 4,500, 5,000 rands, and the car was perfect.
Yeah, just that's what I said, most of the very economical, the parts are good, but the main thing is to do it properly. Get all the precision work right, like the measuring, the miking, get the engineering work correct, make sure everything is spot on, the car's going to last you a long time again.
Jazakumullah. Mm. All right, so this is number to call for the program, 011-854-1548. The SMS number, 082-580-8070. Again, 082-580-8070. Waiting for the calls as well as the SMSs. Apologies. After the question coming about here is, it says, it has come through this SMS here, it says, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. I've been using lead replacement petrol in my 1985 Honda Ballad, but LRP is becoming difficult to find. It's a very, very important and a common question also. Anil, what would you recommend that I do? He wants to know regarding unleaded petrol. Would it be okay for him to use unleaded petrol, Adil?
Jim, Mona, it's a very good question. I mean, in today's day and time with the replacement, the LRP replacement petrol being out and using the unleaded petrol, basically, the unleaded petrol is probably better than LRP, Mossad, because of all the tests done and all that, and especially on vehicles with alloy cylinder heads, and better known on the Hondas where they normally came with alloy cylinder heads. The aluminium alloy is too soft for the valve seats to be machined directly onto the head. So basically, because of the alloy steel being so soft, it's actually a bit tricky to seat the valves. So hence, it was necessary to fit hardened inserts to form the valve seats. You know, so basically, they hard the inserts to use the lead to harden it. So basically, the inserts made a special steel, tough enough to shrug off the hammering that gets every time the valves are used. So basically, up and down, opening the valve, closing the valve, they call it the hammering of the valve. And they're using the inserts, you know, obviously raise the manufacturing cost because it was getting more expensive. That's why they use now the unleaded petrol, because the LRP petrol was used to keep that valves hardened. So basically the lead was used to harden the valve and keep it that way. So now with the unleaded petrol, it's more softer, so it doesn't allow the valve to seat more properly because of the normal use of the LRP petrol. So basically the unleaded petrol can be used, it will be alright on those aluminium alloy cylinder heads. But I suggest the one with the cast iron cylinder heads, they're going to have a problem with the unleaded petrol because they won't be that lead to soften it up or to harden it up in the end. So basically, I don't think it will be a problem. The unleaded petrol will actually be better for the vehicles. The basically, the Honda Ballads, which are known as the pop-up light one, they were very successful. They were also like the Kentucky Toyotas we talked about earlier on, very reliable cars. Also lasts a long time and gives you a good mileage and economy. Maybe I didn't explain it too well because of the terminology used, but in the simple terms, the unleaded petrol can be used, no, it won't be a problem.
Jazakumullah for that, Adil. We're going further, inshallah. The questions are coming through, a few of them. Adil, this one states with regards to a Honda Civic here. The brother says he changed his oil, but it sprays out at the bottom when it starts the vehicle. What could be the problem?
So come again, sorry, man. I didn't hear you again.
The brother says he's got a Honda Civic.
Mm-hmm.
He changed his oil, but what's happening is that it sprays out at the bottom when it starts the vehicle, the oil coming out.
Jim, so there's a common problem, and a lot of guys make that mistake, is when they're removing the oil filter from the engine block to replace the oil filter, the old seal gets left behind onto the block. So when they screw in the new oil filter, because it's a cartridge type and it screws onto the block, the two oil seals meet and they don't seal up properly. So what's happening is basically the oil is spraying out through the one seal. Not a difficult thing, just remove the oil filter again, take the one seal off and just replace it with only one seal. So basically it's got two seals now, trying to seal it off, and you're always going to have that problem.
Adil, a question with regards to the KZTE's 3-litre Buckies, 1999 model. I think the timing chain slipped off, possibly there's a valve problem there. He was told by a few car dealers that don't even bother fixing up the engine, it's not going to come right. The brother found out the estimated cost of purchasing a second-hand engine is going to cost him 24,000 rand. Adil, what's your experience fixing up those engines? Will cost much, much less. But tell us more about this vehicle, Adil.
I don't think it will cost him. It depends when the timing chain or whatever the camber broke, what happened actually. So basically to remove the engine and strip it down and see the cost factor, how much it will cost to repair the engine. Like you just said earlier on that you repaired your engine for 4,000 then, which is economical on a vehicle like that. And I don't think the Toyota parts for the KZE engines are too expensive. And they can be sourced easily because there were many built back in the day of those models, and they were very popular and they were very reliable. You know, which one was it, Monsop? Was it
The double cabs, the 2000 models, the 3 liters.
3 liters, yeah. There were plenty of the 3 liters available also.
Right.
And I don't think it's advice should have been given that it's not worth your while to fix the engine. In today's day and time, anything can be fixed, also at a price.
Yeah.
But I think the right way to do it is remove the engine, or maybe not even necessary to remove the engine. Just remove the cylinder head and see the extent of the damage below that. Maybe you can just get away by just replacing the cylinder heads and it come out really cheap. So I think the my advice to the listener is to rather get a second opinion, maybe take it to a good Toyota technician who can actually determine from his experience also exactly the cost factor. And I don't think it can actually cost him more than around 20 or 24,000 and maybe less than that also.
The brother says they want 50,000 rands. Are they letting 50 grand?
As it is.
It's not a bad price, eh?
Well, you mean with the engine damaged?
Yeah. They're normally selling for about 100,000.
Yeah, I think, and they're very good sellers, and they, I'm actually quite surprised that, you know, that that the engine actually went, because they're really reliable, those vans. Maybe it was a bit neglected, but I think, yeah, fair enough, most of, even if he comes in with the engine at the worst, he's running off 30,000 rand, which I don't think will be more than that, he's still in the market value of the vehicle.
Okay. Arden, the brother's got a 2000 Volkswagen Passat. He wants to know, he says, how can I tell if a head gasket is gone? There's no smoke from the tailpipe of my 2000 Volkswagen Passat.
Yeah, the easiest way to tell if the cylinder head gasket is really blown badly is to remove the oil filler cap and to turn it around and see on the if there's any moisture on the cap. Or normally you get that oil-water mixture, it looks like milkshake, kind of a white mashy color.
Yeah.
If he notices that, then he can know for sure that the gasket is blown. Or there's a test he can do. There's a simple test. If he takes to one of the radiator guys, who they normally put a chemical into the radiator and it changes color, that can also determine if the gasket is blown. But that test, in my experience, not really very accurate.
Mm.
The more accurate test he can carry out on the vehicle is a cylinder head leakage test, which he can book into a mechanical shop and they can carry out that test for him. Very accurate and very precise to tell you the gasket is blown.
I think somebody told me something some years ago regarding how to make up if the head gasket is gone.
Mm-hmm.
What he said is open up the radiator cap, okay? Make sure the water is full and start the car. And if the water comes out of the radiator cap of the radiator, then this is a sign that the head gasket's gone.
Jim, also that is true, but also you have to remember is where did the gasket blow? If the cylinder gasket blew on a water channel, you see, the cylinder gasket, it covers the top of the engine to the bottom of the engine.
See.
And on top and the bottom, you have an oil gallery and you have a water gallery. So if the cylinder gasket blows on an oil gallery, you're not going to notice that. If it blows on a water gallery, yes, you might notice it. It might be pronounced where you can have that effect. But also you must remember is, if the car is too hot, also it's going to throw the water out. So the car must be absolutely cold when you're doing that test. It is correct, it can be done, but it just depends where the gasket is blown. Sometimes you can do that test and nothing will come out to the radiator, but the gasket can still be blown.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I explained, either the oil gallery or the water gallery or either both. That's when you get the oil and the water mixing, where the gasket is blown so badly that the oil gallery and the water gallery meet together and they mixed. But sometimes only the oil gallery is blown where you'll sieve the oil through. And sometimes only the water gallery is blown where you'll see the water coming out through the exhaust sometimes also.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The question coming about here is with regards to Honda Civic here. The brother says that I cannot start my car if it is on even the slightest incline. If I let it roll until it is on flat ground, then it starts right up and runs without problem. Adil? Surprising, eh?
Mm. Jim, also, I think the problem he's got there is the fuel pump not picking up the fuel, Mosam.
Yeah,
it's common on, I know a lot of cars, on a Mercedes, especially when the fuel used to be empty, when every time you climb the hill, the clutch started splattering and doing all funny things and cutting out. And as soon as you over the hill, there is a sign again. So basically what you should check, there's a surf in the tank. Maybe you should check if that surf is not blocked, or maybe the oil, the petrol pickup is pipe is not clogged or is routed properly. And maybe check the tank, if the tank is not clogged or blocked or maybe crinkled up or blocking the fuel. Or the other way to rectify the problem is just keep the fuel above quarter tank.
Okay.
And I don't think you'll have that problem. But it definitely is a fuel problem, he's got.
All right, Jazakumullah. Audio the question, brother says he's the car struggles. It's an Opel Corsa 170 Ti. Sometimes also doesn't start. The car struggles to start when the engine turns over slowly. If it is jump started from another vehicle, it says it fires up. And this happens on and off. Sometimes it starts immediately. Battery has been checked and also it's fine. And the alternator also is fine. I really want your experience, your information regarding this here.
On a diesel vehicle, it's a common problem, especially when the engine starts getting lazy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when the engine doesn't turn over properly, like maybe the rings are beginning to seize up or the bearings are beginning to seize up. Okay, that's a worst case scenario, but I think the first thing you should check is even check the starter motor. Can also be a problem if the starter motor starting to get lazy. When the starter motor starts to get lazy, also it can drag and cause that problem. So that will be the cheapest option. So let him check the starter motor first. If the starter motor and everything is in order, then he should go for the engine, do an engine compression test, and then he should get his answer from there. Probably maybe worn out rings or worn out piston rings or something like it's causing the engine to drag at times. Yeah.
Okay. Article with regards to Mercedes-Benz, it's a 205 model. Doesn't say what car is it, but just a 205. Benz spark plugs must be changed. The brother says, is he correct? Every 100,000 kilos.
Most of the modern day motor vehicles today, they have the pattern on spark plug, as we know them, not the normal carbon spark plug which you got in the older days where you change them every 20,000 or 30,000 kilometers. The pattern on spark plugs has a higher lifespan, normally between 90 to 110,000 kilometers where they should be changed. They are rather more expensive, hence the lifespan of it. So at the change of those spark plugs, the service bill will be a bit higher. And it is recommended they try and change them at kilometers because failing to do so, loss of power can be noticed. And even seizure of the spark plug in the cylinder can also have an effect on it. So that's correct. Every 90 to 110,000 kilometers, those pattern spark plugs should be changed.
Okay. Adil, the brother's got a 2002 Subaru Forester. It says repeatedly overheating. A heater blows cold air, then goes back to normal. What could be the problem?
The temperature goes back to normal.
See.
And
the heater blows cold air.
All right.
Then goes back to normal. That's it, yeah.
So it blows cold air, then it goes back to normal.
Yeah.
Or it blows hot air, then goes back to normal.
Yeah, I think heater it blows the cold air, and
okay.
All of a sudden it goes back to heat.
Goes back to heat. Shimosov, on that vehicle, you should check the heater valve. Probably could be clogging up. That's why allowing the hot air to come through, or maybe the valve not opening correctly, preventing the cold air to come through. So definitely he's got the heater valve problem, which is common on those cars and most vehicles if you have that problem. Or the other thing, I think the worst case scenario could be the control panel of the heater, the heater actuation, basically the aircon control panel where you switch on the heater and switch it off, the button inside the car. That could also be faulty, but I think the one he's talking about, the problem he's having could be with the heater valve.
Jazakumullah. All right, number to call citizens for the program 011-854-1548. The SMS number is 082-580-8070. Abdul Mercedes-Benz, also the brother says the fuel gauge is not working properly anymore. What would it cost him to repair this here? Full fuel gauge not working.
It depends which Mercedes-Benz he's got. I know the older models, the common thing, the fuel gauge, there was a little copper wire on the gauge used to break, and then the gauge used to work and fluctuate and give all erratic readings. That one not too expensive. I think about under 1,000, then you can get away with a fuel gauge repair or replacement on that one. The newer models, the fuel gauges are a bit more expensive. You can look over 2,000 then for the fuel gauge there. And normally, if the fuel gauge is not fitted properly to the vehicle, basically the fuel gauge on the newer vehicles and the fuel pumps, they work together. So if you're replacing the fuel pump, it's always advisable that you replace the fuel gauge with it. because they work together because of the split in the tanks on the newer models. That means you have half a tank on the left side of the car and the other half on the other side of the car. Hence, you have the two fuel sender units. Those are a lot more costly. I think it costs you in the region of over 4,000 then for those ones if you're going to change both of them. So it depends. If you can give us more information on what vehicle it is, we can give him the exact price.
Lovely. Jazakumullah. Adit, the brother's got a 1997 Hyundai Elantra, 4-cylinder, 1.8. He wants to know where is the computer unit. He needs to replace the CU, but doesn't know where is it and who to go to and what will the cost be. Possibly 3-4 grand, have you?
Yeah, Musab, the ECU on the Elantra, if it's to my knowledge, I'm going to try and take you where I normally think ECUs are placed on vehicles. It's either under the steering wheel on the right front of the car or on the left side under the passenger gubby lid or in the engine compartment, either on the right side or the left side. That's where it normally sits on most vehicles, so you should look over there. The replacement cost on an ECU for an Elantra, I'll be lying if I tell you, I don't know exactly the price on those vehicles, but normally ECUs are generally expensive. They start from what you say, Monsa, from about 4,000 to 5,000. They can even go up to 23,000 then on a Mercedes-Benz. I know the most expensive one is like over 30,000 then.
Sure.
And it can be repaired, Monsa. There's nothing really transmission. There are a lot of companies out there, a lot of electronics guys who are doing repairs to these units. And the rate of success is high. It depends, maybe 1 out of 10 that are totally burnt or water clogged. That's what normally causes those things to fail. Can't be repaired, so maybe even a good second, you know, used one can be fitted to the vehicle.
Okay. Adil, a lengthy question here, sent in via SMS. The brother says, Assalamu alaikum. I have a Toyota Corolla AE92, 4AGE motor. ECU powered, car is refusing to start. They say car is getting power to the ECU, the engine is turning, receiving fuel, the spark plugs are sparking, and the car MIPS sensor is connected, but the vacuum pipe is broken. The car was driving with the vacuum pipe as is after flushing radiator. The brother says no DT, so weak since car is standing, so everything is dry in engine bay. Car refusing to start again, what could be the problem?
Basically, the way he explained it, they've done all the basic tests on why the car should start. So basically, the spark is there, the fuel is there, it's all correct. The engine ECU is receiving the signal, is sending the signal. There's the main thing that they should check. I don't know if it has been checked. It hasn't been mentioned.
Yeah.
A compression test should be done to see the state of the engine.
Oh, yes, yes,
so
yes.
So basically, yes. If there's no compression in the engine, the car will never start. You can have all the aspects of the vehicle to start. The spark can be there. The fuel can be there. Everything can be there. But if you've got no compression, there's no way the car can start. So basically, a compression test should be carried out to the vehicle. Make sure the compression is good. The other thing he didn't mention they should check also is the timing. The timing is correct. The timing belt, if it was replaced, is all on its marks. And the timing, the firing is all correct. That should be checked. And even the firing order of the engine should be checked. I think the spark plug wires are all in the right position. So I think basically those three things should be a main concern for him to check. And I think one of those is a faulty and he's going to get the car started after that.
Jazakla, I think you're 100% correct. The compression is number one culprit.
Jimos.
All right, so then the question here is, the brother says he needs to know the price to replace the valve stem seals on the BMW 318i 2002. It's, I think, the E46 model, G.
Most of the replace the valve stem seals on a vehicle like it depends on the kilometers on the vehicle. So basically, if he's got a high kilometers, it will be preferably that he removes the cylinder and basically do up the whole head. So basically, he'll change the valve guides, the valve stem seals, and reset the seals, reseat the valves. Is basically known as a cylinder overhaul, can start you off from 1500 then can go up to about 3,500 then. That is the normal going rate of engine overhaul. To only change the valve stem seals, I don't know on the E46 320 IBMWs if it can be done in place. I know the Mercedes Benzes, the older ones, could be done in place. Worked out very cheap, cost you under 1,000 and you could have done a job like it. But I don't know on these vehicles if it can be done in place.
Jazakallah. Adil, what's the function of a catalytic converter?
See, basically the function of a catalytic converter is to turn the carbon monoxide into carbon oxide for the ozone layer, actually to protect the ozone layer. So basically the carbon coming out from the exhaust will be safer to breathe for the environment, and it's a very costly thing, the materials used. to construct the catalytic converter is very expensive. The replacement cost also nothing under 6,000 then to replace those exhausts. But the only sad thing is in our country is not regulated, so basically lots of people cut it out and toss it away. In the European countries, the vehicles have to be taken for a mod test every year. So basically to check if the catalytic converter is functioning properly and the carbon coming out from the exhaust is according to specs. That's why in our country now also that you can see on the new cars they charge you the carbon tax that you have to pay because of that. So basically I think in a few years time that law will be introduced into our country and then it will be an extra cost for the consumers and for our listeners to fork out every year to try and get the mod test to be according to. You'll have a yellow sticker placed on your windscreen, same like a license disc, to see if it is on order, and then the traffic department can even stop you for that and give you a ticket if it's not in order. So basically the catalytic converter is to protect the ozone layer and to give you a more healthy, free breathing environment.
Okay. All right, Jazakumullah. We've got further limited time available, and I did the other question here is, the brother says he's got a Chrysler 2002 model. The car cranks, hair spark, can hear fuel pump coming on, but not also giving any error codes. What could be the problem, Adil?
Tim, also, we come back to the question if it's a diesel or is it a petrol. Basically, he's got the what we talked about earlier, the spark, and I mean, he said he's got the petrol.
Gee.
And basically, to check the compression again, Mossad, that is the number one culprit. You know, a lot of people go through all the issue of checking this and that, and the main thing they're not checking is the compression. Compression is the first thing to be checked. After spark and fuel, compression must be next. There is a step you go in. So basically, you go spark, fuel, compression. If you go those three aspects, the car should definitely start. And if your timing, everything is correct, the car must start. This is the basic requirement you have for the vehicle. So I think in both the listeners, the car's not starting, that should be checked first.
Lovely. Adil, the question here stating here, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, the brother wants to buy a Kia Spectra. Doesn't say what model, but assume the 2005 models. What's your mashura on this, Adil? Would you advise him to buy the Kia Spectras?
Most of the Kia motor brand on its own has come a long way. They make some lovely vehicles. And you see, it depends if he's in that class to actually go into that class of vehicle. Does he really need that vehicle? Did he compare other vehicles on the same platform as that vehicle, and is it going to be a practical thing? See, today the big mistake we make, we buy vehicles that we're not really going to use. You know, we buy an SUV because maybe for a status signal, or maybe because the Joneses got it, or because it looks nice. You know, buy a vehicle that's practical for you and your family. Is it fuel economical? Is it comfortable? Is it doing your job? Now you buy a massive vehicle, you know, it's a big 4x4, we hardly use, we don't hardly go off-road. To maintain a vehicle is another story. You know, the tires are expensive, the services are expensive, the fuel is expensive to run the vehicle.
Yeah.
So basically even those people taking out insurance on the vehicle, the insurance is also expensive. So basically, if he feels that the car is right for him, okay, the brand, I'm giving you my side of the vehicle itself. You know, it's a good vehicle, they've come a long way, they're getting very popular. I personally think in a couple of years' time, they're even going to outclass a lot of major brands, and they'll probably take the market, really, because they're very reliable, they're nice-looking cars, they're comfortable cars, and they're very economical, and one of the motor manufacturers has come with a 5-year guarantee, you know, lots of people give you that, you know, and I've even given you 150,000 kilometers, so, you know, that's phenomenal, so that speaks for itself on its own also.
Gee. Adil, let's take our last question for tonight's program. It's 7:54 p.m. Assalamu alaikum. Says, Malana, my Mercedes C220 does not idle. What is the cause? What could be the cause? It's an auto.
See, most of if it's a C220, I'm thinking about it, it's probably a 1994, 95, 96, 97 model around there.
Yeah.
The common problem on those cars was the wiring harness that causes the car to idle erratically. The throttle body caused it to idle electrically. And then the inlet manifolds sucking air also caused it to idle electrically. But the number one cause is the throttle body or the wiring harness. That should be checked. Normally what happens is where the throttle plug fits into the throttle body, the wiring in there used to shape and used to touch, to arc one another, and that causes the erratic idling. The other main cause on those cars was the airflow meter also caused. But very simple to fix, take it to your nearest Mercedes technician, he can plug the diagnostic on for you, and he can sort that out for you in a jiffy quickly, no problem.
Gee. Adil, Jazakallah for the lovely program, my brother. We learned a great deal, and inshallah, you have a lovely weekend. We can see you next week.
Jazakallah, Mosaf, and to all the listeners, and make sure that Allah given us the opportunity that we can benefit and share our knowledge as far as the motor cars are concerned.
Jazakallah, my brother. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamu alaikum.
All right, 7:55 p.m. your Joint Radio Islam International. We conclude the program, dear listeners. And yes, not forgetting, we have the zonal ijtima taking place also tomorrow, inshallah, from Asr to Isha at the Jami'ah Masjid Lanaysia, Extension 1. Let's try and attend, inshallah. And also the Ulama Kiram, if you are around the Lands area, there is an Ulama program taking place now at the Nur Islam Masjid by Ustad Hazrat Maulana Hassan Dr. Saddam al-Barakatum, Maddadilhul Ali. Alright, 4 minutes to 8 o'clock, we conclude the program. From Mr. Muhammad Kara and Brother Bilal fi Amanillah, request for special du'as. Have a lovely weekend. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.